Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. Fire season is starting early. With hot, dry weather forecast for the rest of the week, residents are advised to be vigilant.
This is a breaking news alert live from the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service.
The National Weather Service has placed the far east of the county in red flag conditions. For the rest of the county, we are in a high wind warning. Conditions are ripe for fires. Actions to take include not using anything that will spark on grass, never use lawnmowers in dry vegetation, spark arrestors are required in wetland areas on all portable gasoline-powered equipment. Campfire safety. Before starting a campfire, make sure you have a campfire permit and that they are permitted on the land you are visiting. Afterwards, ensure that your campfire is properly extinguished. Defensible space. Residents should make sure they have 100 feet of defensible space around structures. Clear dead weeds and vegetation. Remove leaves and needles from gutters. Trim branches 6 feet from the ground. This is a Viejas alert for East County Magazine and KNSJ Radio.
On Tuesday, three fires scorched across the region, and now we bring you a report from Nadine Abbott, who was at the scene of one of those fires in Santee.
Today was a dangerous day for a brush fire, as Sheriff Captain L. James Bouvet told East County Magazine at the last of the fires in Santee.
Well, today is, of course, the worst kind of day for this type of fire when you have this kind of high heat and excessive wind. And it did really pick up pretty quickly with the foliage you can see behind my back is pretty thick. But the fire department, CAL FIRE, sheriff's helicopters jumped on it really quick. And at this point, they have most control of the fire.
The fire started with smoke in the Far East County near Jacamba on Old Highway 80. CAL FIRE responded only to find a structure fire on the other side of the border fence. Per the incident commander, the structure was fully involved and crews remained on scene to make sure it did not pose a threat. Since the house had good clearance, there was no threat to vegetation or the United States. The second fire was in Ramona. It was a compost fire at Dye Street south of Ramona Street. It was extinguished in short order. The third, and most serious, was near the Carlton Hills Golf Course in Santee. A parking lot at Carlton Hills Southern Baptist Church became the incident command post. This fire was very dangerous due to the high winds and the heavy fuels. The blaze threatened Carlton Hills apartment, which had a back fence partially burned. The pail of smoke was heavy enough that it was visible from the west end of Fashion Valley. As I approached the fire scene, the smoke was black and thick due to a heavy cover of the invasive bamboo-like arundo, which burns hot. Heartland Fire committed units along with CAL FIRE, which at one point dispatched air tankers, but these never released their load. The Sheriff, CAL FIRE, and San Diego Fire Department committed helicopter assets plus ground crews, including three CAL FIRE units. Dennis Hanson told East County Magazine that she learned of the fire starting when
fire trucks. I heard the fire trucks stop all of a sudden and realized that it was right down here.
She added, as far as evacuations,
that it's okay right now, but keep an eye on it because we may have to evacuate, but we're pretty safe.
Brody Kekoa Spencer told ECM that when it started, quote, the wind was super strong, unquote. He also saw treetops or crowns burning, which was also reported by the scene commander early on, one of the reasons for the heavy fire response. Spencer also told East County Magazine that the fire, quote, was on both sides of the creek and a little out of control. He added that the smoke was very thick and that sheriff deputies then told them to back off. Sheriff Captain Vauvais told East County Magazine that
We actually didn't do any evacuations per se. There were some folks that got close to the area or in the backyards that were close to the area that we pulled back, but we didn't officially evacuate any structures in this fire.
He added that
And I think a quick response, right? We've learned a lot from the fires over the years, and right now the relationship the fire department has with law enforcement is excellent, and I think this is a good example of a good working relationship.
He did confirm that the fire did get very close to the Carlton Apartments, but that the only property damage was fencing. Given that our region is now under a high wind warning with low humidity and Santa Ana winds, we are still under danger of a fire, so remain alert. This is Nadine Abbott for East County Magazine and KNSJ Radio.
Now, after Nadine recorded that story about Tuesday's fire in Santee, the same riverbed area flared up again on Wednesday, briefly forcing evacuation of homes, but fortunately no homes were burned.
This is Dr. Larry Paul, reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ about a tragic accident in Lakeside. San Diego residents Carlos Vargas and Monica Lupercio, each 20 years old, were killed in a single vehicle crash on April 19th on Interstate 8 near the Lake Jennings exit in Lakeside. Both were passengers and both were wearing seatbelts when the deadly accident occurred. The driver, Mario Carranza, had a blood alcohol level 4 times the legal limit. Because of a prior driving under the influence incident on his record, Carranza has been charged with 2 counts of murder. He pled not guilty, and his hearing is set for May 1st. According to the prosecutor, Carranza allowed his vehicle to drift into the median, and then he overcorrected. The vehicle crossed several lanes and became airborne, plunging down the embankment. Both victims were extricated from the wreckage by emergency rescue personnel and were declared dead at the scene. Carranza could face a long prison sentence if convicted, but no amount of punishment for Carranza can ever make up for the losses felt by the Vargas and Lupercio families. Monica Lupercio's mother said, "He killed our dreams to make her grow up and see my grandkids." Whatever was in her future.
There will be speed lanes on the internet if the FCC goes forward, as Chairman Tom Wheeler signaled, allowing broadband internet service providers like Comcast or Time Warner Cable to charge content providers like ESPN or Netflix higher prices for faster download speeds. Internet watchdogs say this would be a huge setback for smaller enterprises and consumers. Oakland-based Center for Media Justice's Amalia Deloney says everyone has a stake in protecting the internet from becoming separate and unequal. She points to the outcry in response.
It just showed from rural to native to urban to immigrant that people care about this issue.
Deloney says their supporters participated in a tweet chat yesterday that included 2 FCC commissioners. The topic was women in technology, but net neutrality dominated the online conversation.
Question after question just constantly was about what the commissioners were going to do to protect women, to ensure that they had fair and equal access on the internet, to ensure that their startup companies were able to thrive.
Josh Levy of the national nonpartisan group Free Press argues that if the FCC allows some corporations to create the equivalent of fast lanes for some customers, it violates the equalizing principle of net neutrality, which also means net discrimination. Levy calls the FCC signal a huge threat to a free internet.
The only way to stop it is to organize and to channel everybody's anger and energy towards an effort to get the FCC to scrap those rules.
Between now and May 15th, when the commission will formally act, numerous public interest groups are plotting pushback efforts that include petitions, pressure on members of Congress, and public protest. For Public News Service, I'm Lori Abbott.
Coming up next, the Chaldean Corner on East County Magazine's radio show, bringing you news for and about our region's Iraqi Chaldean community. This is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting the Chaldean Corner. Iraq will hold elections for parliamentary offices, including prime minister, on April 30th. All Iraqi-born people living in the U.S. are eligible to vote, the Chaldean American Chamber of Commerce announced.
That includes tens of thousands of Iraqi immigrants here in East County, many of whom cast their ballots at the Crystal Ballroom in El Cajon over the last 2 days. Ben Colasso, president of the chamber, said this is arguably the biggest election since the fall of Saddam Hussein due to the unique circumstances of post-troop withdrawal and immense violence. Leading candidates for prime minister include the incumbent, Nouri al-Maliki, as well as Dr. Ayad Alawi and a Chaldean-Assyrian candidate, Yunadam Yusip Kana. Colasso said the Chaldean community is split among the three candidates. Al-Maliki and Alawi, both Muslims, appeal to Iraqis with strong business ties and property ownership in Iraq, while Kana appeals to nationalistic-minded Chaldeans and those who aim to see Christian Chaldeans have a voice in the parliament, Colasso indicated. The Chaldean chamber has taken a neutral stance on the elections and is not endorsing any candidate. For more information, you can visit ChaldeanAmericanChamber.com.
This is Ed Barena, reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ. Police believe that 52-year-old Jackie Clinton Jackson Jr. may be a victim of a deadly hit-and-run accident. He was found by a passerby, unresponsive, in the street between parked vehicles on Beaver Lake Drive in San Diego's San Carlos neighborhood on April 24th. The San Diego resident was transported to Sharp Memorial Hospital, where he was diagnosed with non-survivable injuries. His condition rapidly declined, and he died several hours after admission. If you have any information on what happened to Mr. Jackson, please contact the San Diego Police Department.
The California Fish and Game Commission is delaying its decision on extending State Endangered Species Act protections to gray wolves. The postponement comes after the commission heard several hours of public testimony at its meeting in Ventura on Wednesday. Amaruk Weiss with the Center for Biological Diversity says this is a huge victory for gray wolves who are trying to return to California where they've lived for generations.
The law requires that wolves be protected in California. Policy requires it. Past precedent requires it. It's what Californians want. It's the right thing to do. And I think we gave them pause.
The arrival of the lone wolf from Oregon in 2011 renewed interest in protections for gray wolves that were driven to extinction in California nearly 90 years ago. Weiss says the wolf called OR7 represents an entire species that's trying to return to the Golden State.
And we only know about him because of his radio collar. There is nothing to say that there aren't other unradio-collared wolves that are making their way into California that similarly need that protection, that state safety net.
Those opposed to state protections for wolves include the California Cattlemen's Association, who say the wolves are a danger to their livestock. The commission reopened the public comment period and set a new hearing date of June 4th. For Public News Service, I'm Lori Abbott.
At first glance, you may not realize how close Bill Pollack has been to death.
It's been 5 years since I had the disease.
The disease is West Nile virus.
West Nile virus hit me like a hammer. I was hallucinating, looking for skillets on the staircase and bottles of water in the linen closet. I was taken to the hospital emergency room and spent the next week or 10 days in there, not having a clue what was going on.
Bill is a retired public information officer from the county's Department of Public Works.
In the nature of my work, I was out in the field all the time. Active, riding motorcycles, and I'd gone on a long motorcycle ride the weekend before. I'd been working in my yard.
We'll never know when he got bit by a mosquito and contracted the disease. What we do know is where mosquitoes pick it up.
Mosquitoes get the West Nile virus from biting birds. In particular, scrub jays, crows, ravens, or any bird of prey.
They in turn can pass it on to humans when they bite them.
My name is Sean Simmons. I'm a vector control tech for the County of San Diego's vector control program.
He's at Dishwasher Pond, one of many sources that can breed mosquitoes.
I'm looking for a stagnant freshwater area. This pond has some cattails around it, so I want to concentrate around those cattails. You're going to get most of the breeding around those cattails, not so much in the open water. Usually, where there's movement, you're not going to find breeding around there. You're going to find it in the still water around the edges of the pond.
He treats the area using two methods. One is oil-based.
We use that when the larvae are at a later stage. When the oil's on the surface, the siphons can't penetrate that surface, and they basically suffocate.
The other is ground-up corncob granules treated with spores.
And they're water-activated. So I just spread those granules in the water. They release the spores. The larvae eat them. It attacks their gut, and they die.
There's many ways to protect you from West Nile virus, from applying insect repellent with DEET to wearing long-sleeve shirts. Now, there's also a way you can help in the fight against this deadly disease.
We have a new app called Fight the Bite. It's really simple to use. You just download it onto your iPhone, your Android, or your BlackBerry. If you see a source, a water source, a dead bird, or a green pool, you basically just take a picture of that source, send it to us. We'll come out and take a look at it.
A great tool for the smartphone age to help combat West Nile virus. As for Bill's struggle with this disease...
In a way, it's my mission to help spread the word about West Nile because it came so close to, you know, taking me out. And I don't want anybody else to go through that. And also, it's made me more desirous of doing things that I really want to do before I die because I almost died and I didn't know it.
In the County News Center, I'm Jose Villanueva.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
If you're looking for a weekend getaway without going far from home, two brand new cabins are now open for visitors at Potrero County Park. For the first time, the park is offering cabins to visitors who want to enjoy the natural beauty of San Diego County's southeast region. County Parks and Recreation celebrated the grand opening of the two new disabled-friendly cabins on Monday. Each cozy cabin with porch measures 390 square feet, sleeps up to five people, and features heating, a ceiling fan, restroom, and small seating area. The park already offers RV, tent camping, and group camping, but these cabins will now give outdoor enthusiasts another option at the 132-acre site. Anybody can reserve the cabins, but people with disabilities will find the building and restroom are built to ADA standards. There are wider doorways, and getting from your vehicle to the cabin has also been designed for easy access. The two buildings also feature energy-efficient windows, insulation, and water heaters for the sinks. The area is susceptible to wildfires, so the siding is made out of cement that's been molded to look like wood, and the roof is metal. The new cabins are nestled among coastal live oak trees, some more than 100 years old, in a valley ringed by rocky hillsides. Picnic areas abound, and visitors also will find ball fields, playgrounds, and hiking trails nearby. Board of Supervisors Chairwoman Diet Jacobs says, "Everyone should have the opportunity to enjoy nature. These cabins are the fourth and fifth to be donated by Cabins by the Lake, an organization that's working to put at least one disabled-friendly cabin at every one of the eight campgrounds in the county park system." Cabins by the Lake founder Mike Dunlap started the nonprofit after he learned that a wheelchair-using relative at Wisconsin enjoyed camping at the one cabin built for accessibility at her state park system every year. So he wanted to give the disabled community in San Diego the same opportunity to discover nature at county park campgrounds here. Guajome Regional Park in Oceanside was the first to get a disabled-friendly cabin back in 2010. The next year, two more cabins opened at Dos Picos Regional Park in Ramona, and since then, over 500 reservations have been made for those three cabins. Parks Director Brian Albright said, "There is a large demand for cabin camping experiences at county parks. To find cabins for those with disabilities is rare, however." He added, "By working with Cabins by the Lake, Parks is able to give many more visitors the opportunity to discover the beautiful outdoors and everything it has to offer." County Parks plans to begin taking reservations for the new cabins in Potrero in early May. Potrero County Park is also celebrating completion of two new trails last year, an interpretive trail and an exercise trail with several fitness stations along the route. For more information about County Parks, visit sdparks.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Ed Barena with a heartwarming sports report. For the fifth year in a row, injured athletes with Team Semper Fi and Team America's Fund are saddling up for an incredible challenge. 10 veteran and active duty service members, some of them amputees, will learn the skills to become cowboys, then go head to head in the ring, and they have just 3 days to do it. These inspiring competitors will head to the San Pascual Valley Ranch in Escondido to participate in a three-day training program, April 29th through May 1st, and a one-day horseman competition on May 2nd, held in conjunction with the Jinx McCain Horsemanship Program. The service members will hone their ranch handling and riding skills in the competition ring and on the horse. Ranch staff will instruct the athletes in various skills, including pole bending, barrel racing, calf branding, and team penning. The athletes will then put their new skills to the test when they compete in the Recreational Cowboy Challenge. By completing the Cowboy Challenge, the athletes gain far more than just bragging rights. They walk away with confidence and teamwork skills that carry over outside the ranch. And their participation serves as inspiration for other wounded service members on the road to recovery. The Peter Murphy Semper Fi Fund Sports Program and Team America Fund helps servicemen and women overcome significant challenges. These athletes embrace a fighting, athletic spirit on their road to recovery, also providing inspiration to other recovering service members. The Semper Fi Fund provides the team with coaches, specialized sporting equipment, entry fees, and travel expenses to athletic events. Athletes are also given the opportunity to receive high-level training from former and current Olympic and Paralympic athletes. The Semper Fi Fund has given more than 70,000 grants totaling over $89 million to more than 11,500 service members and their families. For more information, visit SemperFiFund.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with an update on several measures that have qualified to appear on your June ballot. Some others are still pending. Ballot initiatives approved to appear on the ballot so far include Prop 41, the Veterans Housing and Homeless Prevention Bond Act of 2014. California has 19,000 homeless veterans, more than any other state in the nation. This measure would establish a Housing for Homeless Veterans Fund through this bond measure. Prop 42 is a constitutional amendment that would make open government laws part of the state constitution so the legislature can't take away the rights of citizens, as it did last year. It would require all local government agencies to comply with the Ralph M. Brown Act, requiring open public meetings and notification to the public, and also protecting your right to access public records. An important initiative for consumers, which has not yet been assigned a ballot number, would require health insurance companies to get approval from the insurance commissioner before they can raise your health insurance premiums. Such permission is already required for auto or homeowner insurance companies to raise their rates. The initiative would also prohibit health, car, and homeowners insurance companies from using your credit history or your lack of prior coverage to charge you more. Another measure aims to provide safe, clean, and reliable drinking water for Californians, while yet another would prohibit the legislature from sending appropriations bills to the governor until an annual budget is passed, also imposing other budgetary restrictions on the governor. In addition, there is a referendum that seeks to overturn Indian gaming compacts with two Native American tribes, the North Fork Rancheria of Mono Indians and the Wiat tribe. Several proposed measures failed to get enough signatures to qualify for the ballot, including one that would have required parental notification and a waiting period for abortions sought by young women under age 18. Another measure that seeks to require drug and alcohol testing of doctors is pending signature approval, and numerous others are still circulating, seeking signatures to qualify for the June ballot.
The Fair Political Practices Commission, or FPPC, is weighing a proposed stipulation order that, if signed, would impose a $2,000 fine against Bonnie Burns Price for a mailer from Christian Voters for a More Transparent Government in East County. Price is the former chair of the East County Democratic Club and a supporter of Ben Colasio, a candidate who ran for El Cajon City Council and lost by a narrow margin in 2012. According to the draft stipulation, Price paid $4,188 cash for the mailer to voters criticizing policies of the city council, including raising the sales tax and sewer rates. The mailer urged voters to vote against incumbents Bill Wells, Tony Ambrose, and Bob McClellan, all of whom were reelected. The mailer stated that it was paid for by the Christian Voters Group. However, no such group was registered with the city, the county registrar of voters, or the California Secretary of State. The stipulation acknowledges that failure to provide proper sender identification on a mass mailer is a serious violation of the Political Reform Act. Asked for comment, Price said she was not aware if the FPPC had approved the draft stipulation yet and would defer comment until consulting with her attorney after a decision is reached by the FPPC. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. California is in the midst of a drought emergency, and there's no relief in sight as unseasonably warm winter continues. Governor Jerry Brown is asking all residents to cut water use by 20%, and that may be easier than you think. Simple changes in the garden can make a big difference when it comes to saving water. The County News Center TV's Down to Earth program is now offering several episodes to help you dive into water conservation. Just Google County of San Diego News Center to find them. The programs include, What is an Irrigation Zone? Plants need water to survive, but with little rainfall, most of us rely on sprinklers to do the job. Because some plants need more water than others, learning how to zone your garden can help minimize wasteful water. Another show is Boost Moisture with Mulch. Learn why mulch is critical in saving water in your home garden. You'll also find out how mulch is produced and where San Diego County residents can pick up mulch free or at low cost. Mediterranean Makeover and Mediterranean Plant Palette are additional shows. Mediterranean plants can turn a thirsty lawn into a beautiful and drought-resistant garden. Check out dramatic makeovers at some local homes. You'll also find a program called Native Plants, or How to Plant a Native Garden. Non-native plants are thirsty. Create a beautiful garden instead that cuts down on water use and maintenance by planting native plants, which are inherently suited to our San Diego climate. Another show is called The Water Conservation Garden, The Water Saving Mecca. This episode takes you on a visit to Cuyamaca College's WaterWise Garden right here in East County. You'll see gardening techniques such as xeriscaping that can save a considerable amount of water.
World-famous Harlem Globetrotters have entertained millions of fans in 122 countries over the past 88 years. Now the team, famed for its comedy basketball routines, is bringing fun summer basketball clinics to kids in San Diego and East County. The Harlem Globetrotters are teaming up with 24-Hour Fitness in the Santee, College Grove, and Balboa areas for clinics coached by Globetrotter star players. The two-hour clinics will be offered mornings and afternoons during late June at each of these locations. Globetrotter star Dizzy Grant says, quote, "It doesn't matter what skill level you are, every kid will have a blast at our summer clinics." The clinics not only teach basketball skills, but also how to be a good teammate, both on and off the court. Plus, kids get photos and an autograph session with Globetrotters players. Clinics are open to boys and girls of all skill levels, ages 6 to 12. For more information and to find the clinic nearest you, visit www.harlemglobetrotters.com/clinics. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barena.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today we're interviewing Paul DeLancey, author of comedic books entitled We're French and You're Not, The Fur West, Beneficial Murders, and a comedic cookbook called Eat Me.
My guest, an economist by trade, also writes a humorous blog called Lords of Fun. And he describes himself as dividing his time between being awake and asleep. Welcome, Paul. It's a pleasure having you in our program.
Thank you for having me.
Paul, let's begin with the obvious. Why comedy, especially in a cookbook? I mean, how did you segue from writing treatises on economics to irreverent books that poke fun at everyone, including at yourself?
I think I've always been wired that way, to think in humorous terms. Also, a lot of times life isn't always so funny, so you laugh or you cry.
Right.
But I also think for cookbooks, it's tough to really read a cookbook from cover to cover. They're not really page turners. So I'm trying to make it interesting, and in doing so, I hope that people will actually read more of the recipes than just one at a time.
Yes, that's true. Cookbooks are not usually page turners, and we will be reading an excerpt from that in a moment. But local award-winning author Ken Culkin, for example, says of your other book, We're French and You're Not, that, quote, not only does Paul Delancey keep us laughing, but he makes us cheer for scoundrels. Tell us something about cheering for scoundrels, how you make that happen in your novels.
I like to make all my characters, at least in some way, sympathetic, or you can relate to them. I'm not a big fan of comedies where they just make fun of someone being stupid. I like them to be real people. And in my first book, We're French and You're Not, they're doing all sorts of things to people. They're blowing up things. They're hitting people in the nose all the time. But the way I make them at least likable is they're oblivious to the effects they do on other people. They think they're good people, and they're trying to actually help people. They'll say, why don't other people do as we do? Then they'll be happy.
Well, in some way, that's realistic. I know people do believe that they're doing the right thing even when they don't do the right thing.
Right. And also, I think of them as doing things I would like to do, but I can't get away with. For example, you're in the traffic jam and you want to murder someone. Well, you can't. Law enforcement frowns on it.
Right.
But it'd be fun to do it in a book, and then I try to make that as funny as possible. So people can relate to these things, and they can relate to the urges that these people have.
Right.
But of course, you can't do it. And I think that's enormously liberating.
Where do you get your inspiration for the tidbits? Let's go back to your cookbook. The tidbits in your cookbook. I mean, I see what you do is you have your recipes, and they're international recipes. And then at the end of each recipe, you have these very unusual tidbits. Let me give an example. Here's a brief excerpt from the notations at the bottom of a recipe for Mexican tres leche cake. And your notations say, doesn't evaporated milk sound as if there should be no milk left? Well, because it's all evaporated milk. Condensed milk also seems like it should be hard to make. If you were to try condensing a carton of milk with, say, a sledgehammer, you'd most likely get milk flying all over the kitchen. Then you'd have to clean up all that milk from the walls. And goodness sakes, you'd be in big trouble if you shattered your sweetheart's Ming Dynasty vase on your backswing with that sledgehammer. Best leave condensing milk to the condensed milk manufacturers. Let them work their magic. Where do you get your ideas for these kinds of tidbits at the end of your recipes?
I look up weird facts about celery, for example, or celery seed, and they'll say the Romans thought it was an aphrodisiac, and I can use that. I'll look up something like carrots, for example, and they'll say completely boring stuff. Then I have to just plain make it up. I'll just start with an idea and run with it.
One last question, Paul. What's next? And share a little bit about your writing routine.
Well, next, I just came out with a book called Beneficial Murders, where a man's trying to improve the world by killing off annoying people, which is a good thing because Santa Claus is very upset. He hates dealing with all the annoying people when he's delivering every Christmas. And he wants to nuke the world. And so he will stop nuking the world if the hero, Sam Mollusk, can kill 30 bad people by Christmas.
And I know that it sounds dark, but you make fun of everything in the same kind of wordy romp. It's a romp with words and rhythms, and so it comes out light. How do you do that?
Well, I think everything has a humorous side to it. And I also like to make fun of everything equally, so I'm not picking on anybody in particular.
Right. Our time is up, but thank you, Paul, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
For more information on Paul DeLancey and his work, please visit his website at www.pauldelancey.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today I am here with Robin Reardon with the Lakeside River Park Conservancy, and she's going to tell us about some efforts they're making to improve our environment and public safety.
Unless you know this plant and someone has pointed it out to you, most people just think it's bamboo that lines all the creeks along San Diego. But it's really not. It's a plant called Arundodonax, and it's a very invasive, very dangerous plant. And we've developed a new program called the Arundo Control Project, where we are going into communities with creeks. This year we worked in Los Coches Creek, and we are removing this plant. The residents are really happy to see it gone because it becomes a location where fires can start. The canes are dry, and they break off in floods and form dikes and big mats that float downstream and cause further flooding. It has no habitat value, so when you have Arundodonax in your creek, you don't have songbirds.
Right. It can be really dangerous. I know we reported on a very sad story a few months ago about a homeless woman living out there, and she died in a fire that began with this Arundodonax, so it's important to get that out.
It really is. And during the Cedar Fire, Arundodonax allowed the Cedar Fire to snake into neighborhoods that it wouldn't otherwise have gotten into. So removing it's a really important thing. The other thing about Arundodonax is that it's so thick that it becomes a hiding place for people who are intent on doing illicit activities. So for community members who have this, they feel unsafe. They feel like people are in their creek. They can't quite see them, but they see evidence of trash, and it just makes the community feel a lot less safe.
Yeah, I understand. For example, there have been meth labs found out there, people making illegal drugs, and of course the chemicals they use in that adds a whole other layer of danger when you have explosive chemicals with a highly flammable plant. That's not a good combination.
It is not at all a good combination. So since September 15th of this year, we have been sending out cutting and chipping crews to take out this Arundo, and the residents are so happy because it is such an aggressive plant. It can grow back a foot a week. And if you're not prepared to handle the regrowth, then all of a sudden you've done tremendous amounts of work to cut it back, and it's beating you to the punch because it is growing faster than you can cut it.
That sounds like a big project, Robin. Do you need help? Are you accepting volunteers?
Actually, it's not a volunteer project, simply because the work is so physical that we think it's just too hard for volunteers to do. We actually use CAL FIRE crews to come out and clear the Arundo. We use their chipper, and we have a really good system. What we're really looking for is more homeowners who find themselves with this stuff in their backyard or their front yard, and they're along a creek somewhere in Lakeside, and we would be interested in talking to them because we're going to be applying for a new grant this year, and we would like to remove this invasive species throughout Lakeside.
How can people get in touch with you, and where can they get more information, Robin?
If you go to our website, lakesideriverpark.org, you will find the Arundo Project in there. It has all the documentation that you may need to sign, and then give us a ring, and we will put you in the list.
Very good. Well, thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
This is Miriam Raftery. This week, we're on the road in Hukumba Hot Springs, a town that is bubbling with activity. The town recently changed its name to take back its historic roots. The name Hukumba means healing waters and traces its roots back to the Kumeyaay Native American people who used to spend their winters by these natural hot springs. By the 1920s,
Hakumba had become a mecca for Hollywood celebrities in the silent movie era. But then a fire burned down the historic hotel and bathhouse, and construction of Interstate 8 moved traffic away from old Highway 80 through the heart of this community. Hakumba almost became a ghost town, but now it is springing back to life thanks to the vision of the people here with us today. Dave Landman is a successful businessman who was actually asked by the townspeople to buy a rundown spa and resort and turn it once again into a destination to draw people to Hakumba Hot Springs. So he bought the promissory note for the Hakumba Hot Springs Resort, and he made a surprising discovery. Dave, tell us what else was in that note.
Well, it turns out that the promissory note was secured by 29 properties throughout the town. It included most of the downtown area, some residential sites, and a lot of vacant land.
So what was your reaction when you learned that you were the proud new owner of an entire town?
Well, it went from one project to 29 projects, so it was a little bit overwhelming at the time.
Now, the people of the town were confident that Dave could make this a success because he already owns another wildly successful business in Hakumba. Tell us about that, Dave.
Yeah, about 15 years ago, my wife and I bought a rundown RV park on the north side of Interstate 8, and we actually turned it into the eighth largest clothing optional resort in the United States, the Anza Springs Resort.
So what is so attractive about Hakumba to bring so many people there?
It's a number of things. Number one, it's just an hour away from San Diego, so you know, we call that the daycation destination place where people can come out for the weekend or just for the day use and enjoy the facilities. There's also the climate is beautiful because we're above the clouds, and in the summertime especially, we're so much cooler than the valley. So we get a lot of people up there from the El Centro, Yuma, Palm Springs area.
Now, Dave has been hard at work remodeling the Hakumba Hot Springs Resort, adding a new restaurant and a Southwest decor. But there won't be any skinny dipping since the spa will not be clothing optional. You can find out more about their big opening season plans at the www.hakumbaresort.com. Now, Dave, what else are you planning in the area?
Nothing is finalized yet, but we've had a number of calls from people interested in renting some of the retail spaces. We've had some artists contact us because they know our desire to turn it into an art-type community. We're working on a number of things. You know, some of the things in the back of my head are maybe a winery. We've talked about a number of other things, but that one kind of comes to the head all the time.
Thank you very much, Dave. Danielle Cook is a driving force behind the Hakumba Boulevard Revitalization Alliance. In fact, she and her husband, Howard, helped recruit Dave to buy the Hot Springs Resort. Danielle, tell us about your vision for Hakumba Hot Springs.
My vision of Hakumba Hot Springs is similar to that of the Landmans. I envision the community as being another backcountry version, if you will, of Taos, New Mexico, a community where artists gather, where entrepreneurs want to come in and build businesses, where people want to come and chill out at the Hot Springs Spa and enjoy our special air, light, and ambiance.
You've started some websites where people can find out more about the hidden treasures in Hakumba Hot Springs and the surrounding areas.
Yes, we started a website about a year ago, www.gosandiegobackcountry.org, to give tourists an idea of some of the free things that they could do in the backcountry, in Boulevard and Hakumba, and also places where they could stay, places where they could eat. We even have a section that tells people of different hikes they can go on and gives them an idea of a road trip that they can take with their family.
And you also have another website devoted just to Hakumba, and that site is hakumba.org.
Yes.
Now, there is also a lake, Lake Hakumba, which had gone virtually dry, and now I understand it's being restored.
Hakumba Lake now is for a virtual birder's paradise. The lake is filling up naturally. We have nesting tricolors, which are a bird of special interest, according to the Audubon. We have birders there every weekend, and this has brought in business for Hakumba Lounge and will bring in business for the spa. In addition, some of the residents of Hakumba have taken it upon themselves to clear brush and have built trails, so you can now walk almost entirely around the lake.
Wow, that's great. Plus, as you mentioned, the Hakumba Hikers and Walkers is another new group that's formed, and they're leading people on treks all over through the scenic mountains, deserts, and historic sites in this region. Hakumba also has an arts council, and recently they revived another town tradition, the Hakumba Blues Festival.
Enigmatic love, a love like no other.
father. In the summer sun, I strolled the shore. The sand warmed my feet, the waves soothed my heart within a glowing light.
I'm here today with Joe Marshall, a talented blues musician who is the powerhouse behind the festival. Joe, tell me how long you've been playing the blues.
Well, I've been playing the blues for about 45 years, and I got interested in the blues. Some friends of mine started turning me on to it. At the time, I was interested in most rock and roll, I guess about anybody my age would have been. And I found that the blues suited more of my music, because I primarily play the harmonica. I love the blues because it's for everybody. It's from the working man to the white collar.
This is the second annual Hakumba Blues Festival. What makes this such a special event for the local musicians?
It's a great event for the local musicians. They get to network. They get to meet a lot of other musicians from all over. We had musicians from San Diego. We had musicians from Imperial Valley. We had musicians from the Midwest. We had musicians from Northern California. And so it made it very special. Primarily because of that, and secondly because it gave all these people a chance to reunite.
So it's one big jam session out there.
One big family, one big jam session, yes.
We're going to end today by playing a little riff here from Mama Christie, who is one of the talented musicians that you could hear out at the Hakumba Blues Festival. And you can find her music at www.mamachristie.com. This song is called Drip, and it was written after the 9/11 attacks, and it's all about the healing power of love. And here in the town of Healing Waters, Hakumba Hot Springs, it seems especially fitting. You can find out more about Hakumba Hot Springs at www.eastcountymagazine.org, and be sure to tune in for future editions of On the Road in East County.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is Ben Martin with a sports report about some local athletes who are making a big splash. Two members of the San Diego Sea Stars synchronized swimming team have just earned ninth place in the duet event at the U.S. National Championships. The team has its roots in East County and practices each week at San Miguel High School in Spring Valley. Held in Arizona from April 8th to the 11th, the event features the top synchronized swimmers in the U.S. The routine of Ainsley Douglas and Alexander Suarez beat 25 duets from around the country to place ninth in the 13 to 15 age group during the competition. Next up for the club is the Age Group Regionals on May 17th in San Diego. The San Diego Sea Stars will be entering a number of routines in several age group categories starting as young as 11 years old. Synchronized swimming requires a unique combination of strength, agility, endurance, flexibility, and speed. The San Diego Sea Stars synchronized swimming team practices 3 to 6 hours per day, 4 days per week at the Mount Miguel High School pool. Elite-level synchronized swimmers typically practice 8 hours per day, 6 days per week. You can also join the San Diego Sea Stars synchronized swimming team on May 3rd from 10 a.m. to 12 noon at Mount Miguel High School and be part of the USA Cinco de Mayo. This is a free opportunity for kids of all ages to learn about, see, and try synchronized swimming, and above all, have fun. Everyone who attends gets the chance to be a synchronized swimmer for the day.
This is Miriam Raftery with some tips for college students from the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The FBI has issued a warning for college students traveling abroad to be wary of efforts by foreigners to recruit students for espionage. The FBI has released a video called Game of Pawns, the Glenn Duffy Shriver Story, to educate students traveling overseas about the espionage threat. 3 years ago, Glenn Duffy Shriver, a Michigan resident and former college student who had studied in the People's Republic of China, was sentenced to federal prison in the U.S. for attempting to provide national defense information to Chinese intelligence officers. Over 280,000 American students studied abroad last year. These experiences provide students with cultural opportunities and can equip them with specialized language, technical and leadership skills that make them very marketable to U.S. private industry and government employers. But this same marketability makes these students tempting and vulnerable targets for recruitment by foreign intelligence officers whose long-term goal is to gain access to sensitive or classified U.S. information. The Game of Pawns video dramatizes the steps taken by intelligence officers to recruit Shriver and convince him to apply for jobs with the U.S. State Department and the Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA. The FBI urges American students traveling overseas to view this video before you leave the U.S. so that you're able to recognize if you're being targeted or recruited. So just how do foreign intelligence officers routinely interact with students? First off, they don't normally say that they work for intelligence services when they develop relationships with students. They will claim other lines of work. Intelligence officers then develop relationships with students under seemingly harmless pretexts, such as job or internships opportunities, paid paper writing engagements, language exchanges, and cultural immersion programs. As the relationships develop, a student might be asked to perform a task and provide information, not even sensitive or classified information necessarily, in exchange for payment or other rewards. But over time, these demands grow. Intelligence officers might suggest that students, after finishing up their schooling, apply for U.S. government jobs, especially national security-related agencies. So how can students protect themselves if you're studying abroad? First, be skeptical of money-for-nothing offers and other opportunities that seem too good to be true. And be cautious of being offered free favors, especially any that involve government processes such as obtaining visas, residence permits, and work papers. Minimize personal information that you reveal about yourself, especially on social media. Minimize your contact with people who have questionable government affiliations or anyone you suspect might be engaged in criminal activity, of course. Properly report any money or compensation you receive while abroad on tax forms and other financial disclosure documents to assure compliance with U.S. laws. When you return to the United States, report any suspicious activity to your local FBI office, or you can contact your local U.S. embassy or consulate while you're abroad. Glenn Duffy Shriver issued this warning to other students not to do what he has done.
The motivation behind it was definitely greed and money. You know, when you're having money thrown at you, especially when you're in a place like Shanghai, it's a hard tap to turn off. They say everyone has their price. And, you know, when you're being told, hey, you don't have to do anything about it. We just want to be your friends. Here's $10,000, no big deal. It's hard to say no to. But recruitment's going on, you know. Don't fool yourself. The recruitment is active. And the target is young people. Throw lots of money at them. See what happens. Through the time, they kept telling me, hey, you know, we don't want anything illegal from you. You know, we're not asking anything illegal, you know. At the same time, they were telling me, hey, maybe it would be best not to talk about, you know, us meeting with each other, things like that. Once they've got you on video taking that money, whatever happens is they've got you, you know. There's no going back from that.
Shriver was first asked to write political papers, then developed a friendship with others who suggested he apply for U.S. government jobs. Eventually, he did realize they worked for the Chinese government, but he still took $70,000 in exchange for applying for jobs until he got arrested. He pled guilty and was sentenced to 4 years in prison. And of course, if someone actually succeeds at passing along classified secrets, you could go to jail for much longer, in prison perhaps for the rest of your life, for treason. Shriver admitted in court that his ultimate objective was to get a job with a U.S. government agency that would give him access to classified information, which he would then provide to the Chinese officers in return for cash payments.
Now, to a recent college graduate, $70,000 seems like a lot of money, and the promise of even more was just too tempting for Shriver to pass up. But what he didn't consider were the long-term costs of his actions, which included throwing away his education, his career, and his future by becoming a spy for China. You can view the video and get more tips on how to protect yourself when traveling out of the country on the FBI website at www.fbi.gov. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Oh, yeah.
The Lakeside skateboarding community has something to be excited about this spring as construction on the brand new Lakeside Skate Park is almost complete. The project has been a community-based effort started in 2009 to give kids a clean and positive environment where they can perfect their board skills without getting chased away by security guards and angry residents. The new facility has a large area committed to the sport with terrain that rivals some of the best skate parks in the country. Rails, ledges, vert elements, and an empty pool are just a few of the new features that will be available for kids to ride. Many local businesses and private donors have come together to fund the project, including a major sponsorship from the Tony Hawk Foundation. Tony was seen in the park last week, which caused quite a buzz as he skated and signed boards and t-shirts for the kids. The skate park will open on April 25th at 3 p.m. with a ribbon-cutting ceremony. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
This is Leon Thompson with news about the latest bold tactics being used by international drug smugglers. Drug smugglers have been using ultralight aircraft to smuggle narcotics over the border. The U.S. Border Patrol asked the public to report sightings of suspicious ultralight aircraft. An ultralight aircraft sounds like a motorcycle and may be spotted 24 hours a day, but often operate at night. If you see one along our international border, the U.S. Border Patrol asks that you report it by calling 619-498-9900.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.